the beginning of the end? The roadmap away from restrictions starts at places like this. Reopen for business as more limits are lifted across Ontario. The measures for the months ahead.
It provides Ontarians and businesses with the certainty they need to make the plans of their own.
The plan for a post-pandemic life and how soon the province thinks we can get there. Good evening. The way we live could look and feel very different by next spring.
The government's goal, returning to a world without public health rules, and that timeline begins soon. Beginning Monday, capacity rules will be lifted at more places and businesses that require everyone be vaccinated. In January, that is going to expand to include areas where you don't need to show your status. And come next March, the need to wear a mask inside could disappear. The premier is calling this approach a cautious one.
With the aim of putting the days of limits and lockdowns firmly behind us, we begin our coverage at Queen's Park with CTV's Sean Lethong. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, when the day started, we were looking towards Monday, October 25th, of being a day where proof of vaccination they would ease restrictions on places that required proof of vaccination. But then we found out from the premier today, they're looking to the big date, March 28th, 2022, of the date that all health requirements would be lifted. Walking toward the finish line, Premier Ford today announcing the province's plan to safely reopen Ontario.
And it provides a clear end state for when remaining public health measures will be lifted, including when proof of vaccination will no longer be mandatory.
Starting with capacity restrictions being lifted where proof of vaccination is required on Monday, October 25th. Places like gyms, restaurants and bars, casinos and bingo halls, and meeting and event spaces.
At the same time, other settings will be permitted to lift capacity limits if they choose to opt in to require proof of vaccination.
Examples of the optional opt-in are personal care services like salons and barbershops. Then on November 15th, capacity restrictions will be lifted at nightclubs, wedding receptions, and strip clubs.
This is a cautious plan. It slowly lifts public health measures over time.
Next, on January 17th, 2022, lifting of proof of vaccination requirements at gyms, restaurants and bars, and casino and bingo halls. Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Kieran Moore, says that January is the right time to review our progress.
That will give us an opportunity to review the preceding 2 months of potential activity within Ontario. It'll let us get through the holiday season.
The next big date is March 28, 2022. That is the date that the province has proposed to be the end of COVID-19 restrictions. On that date, the province plans on lifting all remaining public health and workplace safety measures, including masking. While the end date of March 28th is the goal, the premier says.
If we do not see the numbers in a stable place, we just aren't going to do it.
Dr. Moore says between now and March we'll give the province time to maximize the vaccine rollout, including to those aged 5 to 11, toward reaching the goal of 90% of eligible Ontarians immunized.
And then we will have to learn to live with this virus.
Hoping not to take Ontario back to pre-pandemic life, but looking past the virus that will have disrupted nearly 2 years of our lives. Now, by giving this roadmap, there was also the question raised that in January 17th, 2022, and then March 28th, you've essentially given a finish line to anybody who is an anti-vaxxer and may look towards that as being a date where they don't have to do anything anymore. The premier is saying that we do have to focus on getting as many people vaccinated as possible, and they will continue to push for that until that time. Reporting live, I'm Sean Lethong. I'll send it back inside.
All right, thank you, Sean. This is a moment of satisfaction, but also stress for many business owners.
They've been waiting for this moment, but the longer that has gone on, the tougher it's become for some to prepare. CTV's Mike Walker is live with more on that. Mike.
Well, Nathan, Michelle, restaurant owners and gym owners we spoke with today say this is long overdue, but now they'll spend the weekend looking at extra costs and staffing levels. And the big question they're asking is whether their customers will be comfortable with returning to full capacity.
effective October 25th.
Sitting at his restaurant's bar, hanging on to every word.
Ontario will lift capacity limits.
It's the announcement Ron Keith has been waiting for.
It's been a long time coming. I've yet to see any data that the restaurants are the ones that are causing all this.
As of Monday, his restaurant, the Granite Brewery, will be allowed to be at full capacity for the first time since the onset of the pandemic. Under current health measures, it's operating at less than 50%.
With the subsidies being basically eliminated for us, that's going to make it very, very tough. So if we can get more bodies in here, more people, more customers, it'll be great.
A bread and butter owner, Lazar Budin, says the timing is critical.
Especially now that winter's coming and our patio's closing any day now.
But the family-run restaurant won't be ready by Monday. Budin says he still needs to hire 4 servers.
We've had a help wanted sign up for months. There's a labor shortage, I think, for a lot of places. They're going to have to scramble, I think, to find employees.
Customers have mixed feelings about dining shoulder to shoulder again.
I think anything to get business back as to what it was a couple years ago is a great thing, assuming everyone's vaccinated.
I would check the restaurant out before I went into it. Some restaurants have naturally originally spaced tables, and I think that would be more attractive for me.
This spin studio in Leslieville has been operating at 50% capacity and has relied on the alleyway outside for classes. But the manager says they won't rush to full capacity right away.
We want people to feel safe and get back to the routine of coming inside.
Staff at this hair salon on Yonge Street are now mulling over whether to implement proof of vaccination to get to full capacity. Currently, only 2 employees can work at a time. Stylist Amy Tintong says she needs the hours.
I've been top, you know, it's not making enough money. We lose some of customer.
Back at the brewery, Keith says the real test will be whether customers have the appetite to dine in a busy restaurant again.
Will people buy into that? Will they be ready at this time, even though everybody will be double vaccinated?
Anticipating it may take some time before his restaurant is packed like it once was before the pandemic.
Now, many business owners we spoke with today say they hope the proof of vaccination requirement will put their customers' minds at ease. But however, with still a staffing shortage in many places, several restaurants we spoke with say they will be delaying going to full capacity. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Mike. And head to our website for a complete rundown of Ontario's reopening timeline. You can find all those details at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Staying with the pandemic, the MPP for Durham, Lindsay Park, is leaving the Progressive Conservative Caucus. Earlier in the month, the Ford government said Park had misrepresented her COVID-19 vaccination status. She was removed from her role as parliamentary assistant as a result. Today, Park called those allegations false, saying she told the premier's office about a medical exemption. Park says she will now sit as an independent, citing a breakdown in trust. Government House Leader Paul Calandra says nobody in his office or the Premier's office ever saw Park's medical exemption, only a letter claiming she had one.
Just ahead, capacity limits aren't the only thing businesses are navigating this weekend. Changes to pandemic support programs leaving some unsure of where they stand and what the future looks like. But first, with a fatal mishap on a film set. No charges have been filed, but the investigation remains open following a tragic death on the location of Alec Baldwin's new movie.
The actor says he is in shock after discharging a prop firearm, killing a cinematographer. CTV's Joy Malbin reports.
It's being described as a tragic accident on a New Mexico movie set. Police say actor Alec Baldwin fired a prop gun while filming his new movie, Rust.
Yeah, right.
42-year-old cinematographer Helena Hutchins was airlifted to hospital, but later died. The director, Joel Souza, was also injured. How the two were shot is under investigation.
For two people to be injured in this way, it draws a lot of conclusions, I think, before we've gotten all the facts. But it's a tragedy.
Expressing his condolences, Baldwin wrote, "There are no words to convey my shock and sadness regarding the tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, a wife, mother, and deeply admired colleague of ours."
That we're all gobsmacked that this could even actually happen, considering that we handle firearms so stringently. I have no idea how this could possibly happen.
Firearms experts are shocked because safety protocols on set are so strict. And while prop guns normally fire blanks, not a hard projectile, they can still be dangerous. And tragic accidents have happened. In 1993, actor Brandon Lee was shot and killed by a bullet left in a prop gun while filming the movie The Crow. His family tweeted, "No one should ever be killed on a film set, period."
The cast and crew are devastated and say that production on the movie has been stopped. It's unclear if charges will be filed. Alec Baldwin says he is fully cooperating with the investigation. Joy Malvin, CTV News, Washington.
Here in the GTA, charges have been laid in the crash that claimed the life of a teenager in Scarborough. 17-year-old Nadia Muzumdar died after she was struck by a vehicle at Danforth and Birchmount just before noon on Tuesday. Police say the vehicle was turning left when it hit the Birchmount Park collegiate student. A 40-year-old woman from Oshawa is charged with an unsafe turn and careless driving causing death under the Highway Traffic Act.
Still ahead, the fight for control at one of Canada's biggest companies. The corporate conflict and boardroom power struggle now playing out in public at Rogers. It's cooled down as we head into the weekend. Michelle Jobin is here. Michelle, a bit of a frigid Friday night, relatively speaking.
It is all relatively speaking. I think we've been lulled into a different sense of what October feels like from the relative warmth that we were experiencing, but it's a little bit different now. We reached a high of just 9 degrees in the city of Toronto, and in terms of how we're doing around the region right now, 5 degrees in Brockville, 3 in Bancroft, 5 in Uxbridge. A little bit warmer in southwestern Ontario, still holding on to just shy of 10 degrees in around the Windsor area, but winds still out of the north. Not too gusty, though, like they were last night or early this morning. And that helps to make things feel a little bit more comfortable. Just some cloud cover on satellite and radar for the most part right now. What we are looking at is 8 degrees at the islands right now and 8 at Pearson Airport. And we're going to an overnight low that is very seasonal of 4 degrees. There's a lot of rain to talk about in the forecast later in the 7 days. So we'll get to that coming up. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. There's a change in the air for Canadian travelers.
Ottawa lifting its advisory against non-essential international travel. CTV's Janice Golding is live with more. Janice.
Hi, Nathan. Up until yesterday, the government was advising all travelers, regardless of their vaccination status, to avoid non-essential travel. But that travel advisory has changed, which has come as very welcome news to travelers and to the travel industry. International travel at Pearson wasn't overly busy this noon hour, but it could soon take off given the federal government has lifted its advisory against non-essential international travel for the first time since March 2020.
I think it's good.
I think it's a positive step towards normalcy.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it's definitely time. I think the numbers are in a positive place right now.
A notice on the Government of Canada website had been advising travelers against non-essential travel, but that's been replaced with a notice urging people to be fully vaccinated for at least 14 days before taking a trip. Those who are not vaccinated, however, are advised to continue avoiding non-essential travel to all destinations.
I think it's absolutely fabulous because, you know, we all are double vaccinated. We've earned that right to try to get back to normalcy.
While the advisory was quietly lifted by the government, it's created quite the clamor in the travel industry. Bruce Poontip is the founder of Toronto's G Adventures, which runs adventure tours abroad.
And I'm very optimistic at the moment. I still think we have a long road ahead of us to get people fully comfortable to travel again.
Poontip says it's been a very long 18 months. When travel was originally shut down, no one in the travel industry had any revenue coming in.
It devastated the industry, devastated travel. And in the last two, three weeks, we've seen an increase in interest and traffic and inquiries. And then in the last 24 hours, of course, it's doubled again. So everyone was just waiting for that government approval.
While the government is still advising people to keep up to date on the COVID-19 situation at their destination of choice, people are very excited at the choices opening up to them.
Where would I love to go? Greece! I really want to go to Thailand.
I want to go everywhere. I've missed travel horribly. I want to go everywhere.
Of course, if you do go away, you're urged to continue following public health measures like masking and physical distancing. While the government is no longer advising against non-essential travel, it is still urging people to avoid cruise ship travel outside of Canada. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Janice. To the changes now to the federal benefits that were a financial lifeline for so many during the pandemic.
The current support programs expire tomorrow, and many in the restaurant business say the replacement benefits won't keep them afloat. CTV's Natalie Johnson joins us live with more. Natalie.
Hi, Michelle. 8 out of 10 restaurants have been operating at a loss or barely scraping by during the pandemic, many of which are still relying on federal support. And the industry says the government has now set the bar too high to qualify for the new assistance program that will replace the existing benefits starting this weekend. At Lazy Daisy's Cafe, it has now been 20 months of trying to keep the lights on and the kitchen running during this pandemic.
We've been treading water. I've been trying to keep my staff paid. I've been trying to make sure all our suppliers are paid and just trying to push through to get through to the other side.
Owner Don Chapman says the saving grace has been the federal wage and rent subsidies they could collect until now, which allowed them to barely break even.
I spoke to my accountant the other day and I said, where would I be if we didn't have the subsidies? And she said, you're in the red. So I said, well, what will I do when the subsidies end?
Chapman will face that reality this weekend when the Canada Emergency Wage and Rent Subsidy programs come to a close. Restaurants can instead apply for financial assistance from a new hospitality recovery program, but need to demonstrate a monthly revenue loss of 40%, a threshold the Lazy Daisy Cafe doesn't meet.
Many restaurants are operating at 20, 30, 35, 39% reductions in revenue.
Restaurants Canada says 7 in 10 restaurants are still using the wage and rent subsidies to stay alive, and 50% of them will no longer qualify due to the new criteria.
Many restaurants across the country, based off the announcement yesterday, have been handed a death sentence.
Their options: raise prices or cut staff.
When employers are able to offer only part-time or very, fluctuating hours of work, that also means that those workers have to make a decision as to whether or not they can take that job or if they need to hold up for something that's more permanent and more consistent in terms of their paycheck.
The owner of the Newtown family restaurant has been working solo 7 days a week since the start of the pandemic because even with the existing subsidies, couldn't afford to pay any staff. And now...
Are you worried you might have to close?
Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. How am I going to pay? Like if I don't have anything, if I don't have sales, how am I going to pay the rent, hydro, gas?
Saying if he loses access to the subsidy, he may have no choice but to give up his restaurant for good.
Can I have a coffee?
And the industry is predicting that if the threshold for applying for these new benefits isn't lowered, tens of thousands of restaurants across the country could suffer, many of which could be forced to close. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Natalie. The University Health Network is set to part ways with nearly 200 employees as its COVID-19 vaccine mandate comes into effect. 181 UHN employees failed to share proof of vaccination by today's deadline. The hospital network announced the policy back in August. A spokesperson says 98% of the over 17,000 employees did comply, including 100% of physicians and researchers. SickKids placed 147 employees on unpaid leave yesterday as its own vaccine mandate took effect.
Across the province, more than 87.7% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and 83.6% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents just over 10.9 million people in Ontario.
Canadians who lost their job because they're not vaccinated may not get employment insurance benefits. The federal government says employers should officially indicate that the worker quit, took a leave of absence, or were dismissed. That could possibly disqualify them from receiving EI. But the guidance also contains a variety of other factors to be considered.
The national COVID-19 picture continues to look encouraging.
The latest surveillance data show a continued decline in disease activity nationally and in most jurisdictions. Over the past week, an average of just over 2,800 new cases were reported daily across Canada, and severe illness trends are stabilizing.
On average, there were about 2,400 people with COVID-19 in hospital each day in Canada, more than 720 in intensive care. 35 deaths were reported daily over the past 7 days. Canada is approaching 90% of the population having at least one dose of vaccine.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 492 new cases in its most recent update. 325 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 29,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.4%.
415 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to more than 583,000 over the course of the pandemic. 12 additional deaths are linked to the virus, one of which occurred more than a month ago. 9,839 lives have been lost to COVID-19 here in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 64 new cases in the city of Toronto and 59 in Peel Region. York has 33 new cases, with 29 in Niagara and 23 in Hamilton. There are 19 new cases in Durham, with 13 in Halton Region.
Meanwhile, federal and provincial governments are trying to figure out what to do with millions of unused vaccines. About 13 million doses are sitting in Canada's central vaccine inventory, and around 6.6 million distributed to the provinces have not been used yet. Officials are looking at how many doses will be required so that every Canadian can be fully vaccinated and get a booster if needed. They're also keeping an eye on the expiry dates to make sure none go to waste.
The excess supply issue arose when it was confirmed that vaccines won't be needed for children. Health Canada is looking at authorizing Pfizer's pediatric vaccine for that purpose. Today, the company reported its clinical study found the shot safe and nearly 91% effective at preventing symptomatic infections in kids 5 to 11. Ottawa says Pfizer is ready to ship millions of doses to Canada when it's approved here.
There is new guidance tonight for anyone who suffered a severe allergic reaction to their first dose of Pfizer or Moderna. Canada's Vaccine Advisory Committee says you can still safely get a second shot. Studies show the reaction is often not repeated, and if there is one, it's usually mild. But NACI still encourages anyone who had a reaction to see an allergist first. The committee also now advises to wait 8 weeks between doses of mRNA vaccines and at least 8 weeks between shots of AstraZeneca. It suggests the longer intervals are more effective.
Both sides are digging in their heels tonight in a very public, high-stakes corporate drama.
There are more twists and turns in what is shaping up to be a lengthy battle for control of Rogers Communications. CTV's John Venevalle Rao has the latest.
The power struggle taking place behind the scenes at Rogers has led to boardroom chaos and confusion in a fight over who will ultimately control the direction of one of the biggest telecommunications companies in the country.
Well, it's family dynamics at their worst, I think, right now.
Those dynamics center around Edward Rogers, the sole son of the company's famous founder, Ted. As board chair, Edward tried to oust Rogers' CEO, Joe Natale, and put in his own pick, only to be blocked by the board, including two of his sisters and mother. The board then removed Edward as chair.
When he came with the plan, his mother and sisters and the five independent directors voted against him, and he lost the battle.
But not the war. Edward Rogers also heads the family trust set up by his father that has controlling shares of the company. And late Thursday, Edward put forward a proposal to change up the board, booting out directors that didn't agree with him and replacing them with allies. The company says it's not sure he has the power to pull off such a radical move, in a statement saying, the company is not aware of this mechanism ever having been utilized in respect of a public company in Canada.
I don't want to see what other news operations we can sweep up.
Many observers have said the fight is like something straight out of a TV drama, like the series Succession, about a family fight for control of a company.
I've actually tweeted that this is like watching the TV show Succession without having to pay for HBO.
And it all happening smack dab in the middle of a multi-billion dollar deal to merge Rogers with another communications giant, Shaw. Some say the power struggle could put that deal at risk.
I predict that Edward Rogers will be successful in removing the five incumbent directors and replacing them with five directors proposed by Edward Rogers.
The company, meanwhile, says the process of removing any director usually takes months and involves notifying shareholders. So this boardroom drama may be far from over. John Venevalli Rao, CTV News, Toronto.
Still ahead, loose change never looked this colorful. The meaning behind the splash of color on the new dime.
Tonight, Pat Foran. Coming up, it's Feedback Friday. We had a lot of reaction to our story on airlines canceling flights at the last minute. A new type of convenience store that has no cashiers and a woman who bought a $700 laptop that ended up costing her more than $2,000. Feedback Friday is just ahead.
Well, we're going to be on a seasonal sort of track as we get into the next little while. Temperatures are going to feel cooler than they have, but as we get into tomorrow, 12 degrees will be our forecast high. We do have the risk of seeing some showers in the afternoon for the most part, but we will see some sunshine and it won't be too windy. Not a bad day, not a bad weekend, especially because it's feeling like fall, to catch up on some of the fall colors, showing you where colors are at their peak and starting to fall, like Barrie and Halliburton over towards Georgian Bay. And here in Toronto, Durham, York, at 82, 100% coverage, starting to see some leaf fall now, and that'll probably get even more so as we get cooler and windier over the next little while. I'll have more details, including your 7-day forecast and where we'll see that rain I've been talking about, coming up in 2 minutes. Stay with us.
Viewers had a lot to say about our stories on canceled flights and expensive financing offers that allow you to buy now and then pay later.
People also had questions about a new kind of convenience store popping up in Toronto that's self-serve with no cashiers. Pat Foran joins us with Feedback Friday. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, many were interested in the idea of a store that is open 24 hours a day with no cashiers, but there were concerns about loss of jobs and also how it could affect customers who may live with vision or mobility difficulties. Aisle 24 is opening self-serve convenience stores like this one in Toronto and hopes to open 200 of them across the country. You need an app to get inside, and once you create an account, you pick out your items, scan them, and pay. No cashier required.
This type of technology automation is going to be very prevalent in many different businesses.
Frank wrote, "I am disabled. What do I do if the shelf is too high? I often need an employee's help. This looks inaccessible to me." As airline travel begins to return to normal, there are issues with flights being canceled at the last minute. Some passengers say they've had no choice but to buy tickets on other airlines to get to their destination, often at great expense.
They didn't say anything. They just, sorry, there's nothing we can do.
Monica told us, "My flight was canceled due to a staffing safety issue. When I asked for compensation, they said I wasn't entitled to any." Allison, who asked us not to identify her, made payments on a laptop for 7 years, and it still wasn't paid off. The purchase price was $723. Over 90 months, she paid more than $2,000 and was shocked to find out she still owed almost $400 for the computer, which no longer worked.
I've like paid for this computer maybe four times already.
Susan wrote, $2,400 for a $700 computer. It's sad how these financing companies take advantage of people. Enbridge has a winterproofing program that is giving lower-income homeowners, renters, and those on government assistance free insulation, draft-proofing, and a free thermostat. But if you are eligible, you must contact Enbridge.
Enbridge does not go door-to-door.
There are some companies going door-to-door trying to sell thermostats, smoke detectors, and security cameras. Before taking part in any program, make sure you know exactly who you're dealing with. And Ontario banned door-to-door sales of furnaces, water heaters, and other items. But some things can still be sold at the door. Be very cautious if someone comes to your home trying to sell you something. If you're not sure, just say no. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
The Santa Claus Parade will go ahead this year, but once again, it will be a broadcast-only event because of the pandemic. Organizers say it takes months to get everything ready, and they use the best available data at the time when the decision was made several weeks ago. Last year, for the first time, the parade was pre-recorded at Canada's Wonderland. It was then aired during a two-hour primetime special. CTV is broadcasting this year's event December 4th, starting at 7 p.m.
You know, perfect timing because I'm thinking now's the time to put on the coats.
When we're talking about the parade, you know we're getting into those cold months and it's really starting to feel colder, Michelle.
Oh, it certainly is, Michelle and Nathan. It is time. And also, we are maybe looking ahead to our forecast radar. When I show you that, I'll show you a few spots where I'm seeing signatures of some flurries or mixed precipitation on the radar. So that'll get you in the spirit. Weather is brought to you by Train, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So temperature-wise, yes, much cooler than we were really for much of the month of October, but we're seasonal at this point. In fact, we were actually a little bit below seasonal in the city of Toronto today, but that's going to be corrected as we get into the overnight and into tomorrow. So 8 degrees right now in Toronto, 7 in Trenton, 4 in Ottawa, 9 in Windsor, and 6 in Wyerton. And overnight tonight, this is exactly where we should be, whether we like it or not, at this time of the year, and that's 4 degrees through the overnight period. Mainly cloudy. The nice thing is that winds, which were so gusty last night, especially after that storm rolled through, have really eased a little bit and will continue to be light in the overnight period, so it won't feel quite as cold. Tomorrow, like this around the region, we're going to be really spot-on seasonal for the most part. There is the risk of seeing some showers, and I'll show you how those push in as we get into the next little while. Satellite and radar imagery not showing us too much. There is, of course, some activity off to the west headed our way in the next little while. And I did speak earlier today about the fact that there was the potential for residents north of the GTA extending up to the upper Great Lakes into the Muskoka region to see a mix of precipitation or some flurries out there. And they'll definitely be, especially when we get a northerly or northwesterly flow of air, a bit of enhancement off the upper Great Lakes because the water in the lakes is relatively warm compared to the air, and that's a recipe for that. So I wanted to put our fronts in motion here and show you how things play out over the next little while. We do have some showers, as I mentioned, tomorrow. And then there's another system I want you to watch out for as we get into Monday, actually Sunday night. So here we go. This is Friday into Saturday. And as we start the day tomorrow, we do see a little bit of enhancement in the Muskoka region off of the lake, some showers there. And if it's cold enough, this might be a mix of precipitation or some flurries for you. And then later in the day, we see showers in the GTA, Hamilton, over towards Lake Huron, up through the Bruce Peninsula and also the Niagara region. They start to clear out as we get through the overnight period. There's a little bit of snow going off to the north, and we do see a mostly clear day in terms of precipitation in the GTA on Sunday until the evening when another system rolls in, and that's going to be a weather maker for Monday. So Saturday, 12 degrees, overnight low of 4, showers Sunday, mix of sun and cloud, 12 degrees, then 10 overnight. That's on the warm side. 30 to 40 millimeters of rain Sunday in through Monday at 10 degrees, and then we stay relatively unsettled and seasonal for the rest of the week. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. Also tonight, check that produce drawer in your fridge. Onions of various colors are being recalled over a potentially contaminated batch. What you need to know after the break.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
Psychedelic drugs are most commonly known on the party scene.
But some are also referred to as breakthrough drugs used for people with treatment-resistant depression and other mental illnesses. It's the focus of a report this weekend on W5.
Can you help me understand what it feels like to actually take the drug ketamine?
Before you even sit down, there's a setup. So you talk with your psychotherapist about what it is that you're looking for out of the journey and what you're looking to heal.
Magic mushrooms and ketamine have delivered promising results in the treatment of those facing severe depression and PTSD. W5's host and managing editor Avery Haynes explores why some experts are calling psychedelic drugs a game changer in the treatment of some mental illnesses. And W5's host and managing editor Avery Haynes joins us. Avery, we do seem to be hardwired from youth to think drugs equal bad. And while a lot of times they are, and you've done lots of reporting on that, some of the psychedelics you feature in this story are making an impact in Canada. Can you explain how so?
They are, Michelle, and I want to be really clear. This is not buying ketamine off the street because it is a party drug known as Special K, or sort of harvesting magic mushrooms and doing that and thinking all of a sudden your depression is going to be cured. These are treatments that are being carried out in clinical settings by therapists. There's a whole full series of work beforehand, during the actual trip and after. For ketamine, what's interesting is that there is a belief that depression causes neurons in your brain to die, and that ketamine actually regrows those neurons and creates new connections between those neurons, so that 40 to 70% of people who have treatment-resistant depression try ketamine and notice almost immediate, and I'm talking within hours or weeks, difference in the way that they're feeling about depression and suicidal ideation.
And you feature a military veteran in your story. How has it helped him?
You know, he has tried everything to battle the demons that have haunted him since his two tours in Afghanistan. COVID hit him really hard. And he, quite frankly, Michelle, did not want to be here anymore and was in a very dark place. He heard online about other veterans getting the treatment paid for by Veterans Affairs. He started this treatment. He says now he wakes up happy for this day, and he really is pushing to have more coverage for other veterans who are experiencing treatment-resistant depression.
You also talk about magic mushrooms in your story, which are illegal, but there are certain instances where the Canadian government is making some exceptions. Explain that.
Right. So back in 2020, Health Canada decided to grant Section 56 exemptions, essentially allowing some people, generally those who are facing end-of-life anxiety, to legally take psilocybin to reach a different level of consciousness in helping them deal with the prospect of death. And what's amazing about this doc that's airing tomorrow night, Michelle, is that we are actually in the room, both for the psilocybin trip that lasts 6 hours, as well as for the ketamine trip, before and after, to sort of give you a sense of how this works and what the experience is like for those who are going through it.
W5's Avery Haynes, thank you.
Thank you.
And you can watch her entire report, Psychedelic Healing. It's tomorrow night on CTV's W5. It starts at 7.
An important food recall to tell you about this evening. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency has recalled a batch of red, white, and yellow raw onions imported from Mexico over salmonella concerns. Officials say the onions were sold in Ontario, Quebec, and possibly other provinces. They may be labeled under the brand names Big Bull and Peak Fresh Produce. So far, no illnesses have been linked to the batch in question.
The province is expanding a program that offers paramedical care to eligible seniors at home.
Allow seniors in every corner of our province to have the kind of support and assistance they need while waiting for long-term care beds.
The program has been operational in Toronto and 32 other communities since late last year. Long-term care minister Rod Phillips says the initiative has provided home visits and services to thousands of seniors during the pandemic.
Canadian Blood Services says it's working to allow more men who have sex with men to donate blood and plasma. The agency is planning to ask Health Canada to remove the requirement that men abstain from having sex with other men for 3 months before donating. It says it will submit the request later this year. Canadian Blood Services plans to instead shift to a sexual behavior-based screening that's the same for everyone.
He was a versatile actor, being remembered as a joy to work with. Peter Scolari has passed away. The 66-year-old Emmy winner died today in New York after a two-year battle with cancer. He first gained attention in the sitcom Bosom Buddies. He went on to receive 3 Emmy nominations for his work on Newhart. In 2016, he won for his role on Girls. Scolari also appeared on a number of other TV shows, movies, and on Broadway.
Elton John's out with a new album full of collaborations. Nicki Minaj joined Elton John and Young Thug on the track I Will Always Love You. John released his album The Lockdown Session today. He says all of the songs were recorded remotely or with strict COVID-19 precautions in place.
The Weeknd is out with his own new collaboration. Very true. The singer teamed up with DJ supergroup Swedish House Mafia on their new song, Moth to a Flame. The Weeknd recently called off his world tour, but Swedish House Mafia will be heading out on the road for the first time in years in 2022, and they have a stop scheduled here in the Weeknd's hometown of Toronto.
Adele's new song's been out for a week now, and it keeps breaking records. Variety reports Easy on Me has become the most played song in U.S. radio history during its first week on the air. The ballad achieved that feat after it set first-day records for streams on Spotify and YouTube. It's the lead single off Adele's upcoming album, 30, which is out November 19th.
Sci-fi epic Dune is finally in theaters after its release was delayed several times by COVID-19.
Do you often dream things that happen just as you dream them?
Yes.
The movie, directed by Denis Villeneuve, is an adaptation of the novel of the same name. Deadline reports it garnered around $6 million in Thursday night previews across North America, but analysts are waiting to see how Dune performs over the weekend. Box office numbers could be lower as it's also available for streaming in the U.S.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight, TGIF. Let's get the weekend started with an awesome lineup of shows. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
Lifting restrictions. Monday on CP 24 Breakfast. With new rules in effect for bars, restaurants, and gyms, what you need to know before you go. CP 24 Breakfast, where Toronto gets its everything every morning.
And it provides a clear end state for when remaining public health measures will be lifted, including when proof of vaccination will no longer be mandatory.
Updating our top stories, Ontario lays out a plan to lift all COVID-19 measures at the end of March. Starting Monday, some capacity restrictions will be eased in places like restaurants, bars, and gyms with proof of vaccination.
I think it's absolutely fabulous because, you know, we all are double vaccinated.
The federal government has lifted its advisory against non-essential international travel, but people are being urged to be fully vaccinated for at least 14 days before taking a trip.
So that we're all gobsmacked that this could even actually happen, considering that we handle firearms so stringently.
42-year-old cinematographer Helena Hutchins died after being accidentally shot with a prop gun by Alec Baldwin. It happened yesterday on the New Mexico set of the actor's latest movie. The director was wounded but will recover.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you ever have a news tip, photos, or video breaking news, let us know.
On the mark as the Canadian dollar was up one basis point to 80.85 U.S. American benchmark oil gained $1.26 a barrel to close at 83.76. And the TSX Composite Index gained 3 points to close at 21,216.
WestJet is outlining how it will implement new federal rules around COVID-19 vaccination and air travel. The airline says starting October 30th, guests will have to provide either proof of vaccination or a valid PCR test to board a plane. As of November 30th, that requirement narrows to allow proof of vaccination only for those 12 years and older, with limited exceptions. Under federal mandates, WestJet and other airlines also have to ensure all employees are vaccinated against COVID-19.
Canadian spending habits appear to be shifting as the economic reopening hits some bumps in the road. Stats Canada says retail sales pulled back in September after a healthy gain in August. Economists say the drop could be linked to supply chain disruptions and pressure from inflation. A report from TD suggests higher prices and limited availability could be resulting in less spending on goods, and the reopening is likely sending more dollars towards restaurants and hotels.
At the same time, American Express says spending on its credit cards is only going up. Bloomberg reports a record $346 billion was charged to Amex cards in the third quarter, driven by an uptick in purchases of clothing, electronics, and home improvement upgrades. American Express says that spending was fueled specifically by millennial and Gen Z cardholders. Travel and entertainment spending are still 29% below pre-pandemic levels. Well, people across our province are paying close attention to Ontario's reopening timeline.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Christina Tenaglia and Colin DeMello, who's been anchoring this week. Colin, you're hearing from doctors and business leaders on this.
Yeah, you know, for months we've been told, Nathan, that the mandatory masking policies have helped keep a lid on COVID-19 cases. Now we're being told we could go maskless in March. We're going to talk to the Ontario COVID-19 Science Advisory Table to see if they think that's a good idea, and the Medical Officer of Health for Peel Region to see if he is comfortable with his residents taking off their masks.
And Christina, you're speaking to professionals in the movie industry about the tragedy on the Alec Baldwin film set.
Yeah, what happened here? So it's such a tragedy when you consider what happened on the movie set in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The production is Rust. Alec Baldwin, the actor on this production, and the cinematographer on this production was killed when a firearm that Alec Baldwin was holding discharged. With so many safety guidelines and regulations in place across the film industry, how did this happen? And this is not the first time in the history of film that this has taken place. So what happened? What went wrong? What do the professionals have to say about this? This is something we'll discuss tonight.
Christina, Colin, thank you so much. Have a great show. Mm-hmm. NCP 24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP 24 from 7 to 9.
Tonight, new research on the Pfizer vaccine for younger kids.
We want to make sure that we're reviewing all of this submission very, very carefully.
Promising results on infection protection and the planning that's underway. Later on CTV National News.
You may soon find a new kind of dime in your change.
The Royal Canadian Mint is celebrating the 100th anniversary of the famous schooner Blue Nose with a new design. The Blue Nose has appeared on the 10-cent coin since 1937, but the boat was launched in 1921. To mark the one-century mark, a new painted dime is entering circulation. The coins feature a redesign of the famous vessel. 6 million of the blue-tinted dimes will enter circulation, as well as 9 million of the regular silver-colored dimes.
I'd be excited to get one of those.
Sure.
Certainly not sailing weather this weekend. It's going to be this classic October weekend, I think.
Yeah, it definitely is going to feel like October as we get it. I don't know. People might be tough enough to be out there sailing around. I'm not sure. And a bit of a breeze tomorrow. Maybe not so much as we get into the next little while, though, because we are cooling down. Not a lot to show you on Satellite Radar right now because we're just seeing some cloud cover. Tomorrow, some showers as we get into the afternoon. 12 degrees, mix of sun and cloud. 4 degrees overnight. Sunday, not a bad day. We have a mix of sun and cloud. It's very seasonal, 12 degrees, and then a warm 10 degrees overnight. Rain pushes in for Monday, about 30 to 40 millimeters of rain for Monday. So get ready for that as you kick off the start to the work week next week. Back to you.
Thanks, Michelle. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
Good night.